The Tom Woods Show, episode 1882.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey folks, Tom Woods here. We're joined today by Sheriff David Hathaway of Santa Cruz County in Arizona. He's been pretty darn good in his short tenure as sheriff there, and you're going to find out exactly what I mean in just a minute. But it's very refreshing to know that there is a sheriff out there, not the only one, by the way, who reads my emails and uses the numbers and charts to calm everybody down and to justify his refusal to go along with the craziness. So I thought I would have him on to discuss this with us. Sheriff Hathaway, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much. It's been an interesting job here as the sheriff and an interesting campaign period that I just went through. A lot of it was related to the same stuff you talk about on your daily emails and on your podcast, the coronavirus issues and my feeble attempts to stand up against that down here in Santa Cruz County, Arizona.
Yeah, excellent, excellent. So first of all, let's talk about that. How recently were you elected? You were elected in an absolute landslide. So when was that and how do you account for that?
You know, it's interesting, Tom. I've only been in office for 3.5, almost 4 months. And people said that I shot myself in the foot during this campaign because the whole COVID issues came up in the middle of 2020. I started my campaign in the middle of 2019, but by the middle of 2020, they had mask rules here. They had social distance. They had where you had to ask permission from the government to assemble more than 10 people. And when I first got in hot water here is we had a candidate forum. I'm replacing a sheriff who set the record for being the longest serving sheriff in Arizona for 28 years. And so everybody wanted to run. There were 6 candidates. And the first moment where I had problems or people said I was creating problems for myself was we had a candidate forum with all 6 candidates. People submitted questions via Facebook. The moderator, the guy asking the questions, was the chief superior court judge for this county. And they got to the point about masks. They had just made a mask rule in this county. And they went one by one through all the candidates. They gave us each 1 minute to respond. And I was the last one to respond. The other candidates all said, ultimately, they would charge you with a crime. They would cite you. They would arrest you if you don't put the mask on. And the moderator did a real good job. He forced people to give an answer. He didn't allow them to hem and haw. You know, if they tried to say, well, I would educate the public and I would tell them the importance of wearing the mask, he would cut them off and say, no, if the guy says I'm not wearing the mask, what are you going to do? And ultimately, every one of them said they would charge the guy with a crime. They would arrest him. And then it got to me and I said, you know, there may be health concerns, even though this was earlier in the whole COVID scare. You know, there were already examples of people operating heavy equipment that had gotten lethargic, they'd gotten into accidents, you know, hypoxia, things like that, you know, evidence of mold and bacteria colonies in the mask, ingesting the lint. And, you know, I said that people may have health concerns, they may have other concerns about their own personal sovereignty, their own personal freedom, and I wouldn't take action against somebody who wouldn't wear a mask. And also, they had just made these same rules about you couldn't assemble with more than 10 people. Churches had been shut down. So I said, there's also constitutional issues here, you know, First Amendment, freedom of assembly, freedom of religion. And after that, just there was a storm, a frenzy in the media. They tried to crucify me in the media. The local media, the article they wrote about me refusing to enforce masks set the record for the number of online comments on their platform for the local newspaper. Typically, they get no comments or 1 comment or 2 comments, but there were over 300 comments on that article. And people called me and said, you just cost yourself the election. You just stuck your foot in your mouth. And by saying that, you should have just gone with the flow. And so I said, you know, I deserve to lose if people are that dumb. And ultimately, when the election came around, I got 4 times as many votes as the guy who came in 2nd place. So ultimately, it didn't hurt me. And then other things, since I've been sheriff, I mean, the whole vaccination issue, I knew that was coming. So after I'd been in office about 2 weeks, I knew this was going to come with the mandatory vaccinations and the vaccine passports and all that. You know, you had Trump's Operation Warp Speed, going to use the military to distribute the vaccines. And then it was the Biden administration. I knew this was coming. So I studied up on the law on that issue. And I got a call from the county attorney about mid-January when I'd been in office for 2 weeks saying, look, Sheriff, Do you want to make vaccines mandatory for all employees of the sheriff's office? If so, we will write up the legal documents to make it mandatory as a condition of employment that everyone has to take the vaccines. Now, the way that they had these tier systems set up in Arizona, and one of the first tiers was law enforcement and first responders, firefighters, EMTs to get the shot because they have contact with the public. So this was going to set a precedent. And I responded and said, no, I'm going to honor the legal principle of informed consent. It's up to each individual to analyze the risk and benefits and decide whether they want to take the shot. So I declined their offer on that. They said, okay, that makes it easier on us. And since I was the first one making that decision, other people were in the wings watching, like police departments and fire departments, and they followed my lead. And ultimately, it became, you know, where it was not a mandatory thing here in this county. And I actually got a call from one of the elected board of supervisors saying, you know, David, what do you think you're doing? You know, we just found out that the local police department is following your lead, and over half of the officers are refusing to take the vaccine. And then they asked me how many people in your department are taking the vaccine. And I said, I have no idea. Under the American with Disabilities Act and HIPAA, the Health Insurance Portability and Affordability Act, I'm not allowed to ask those questions. It's federal law that says I can't track that information. I can't ask those questions. So those are just kind of some of the little things that I can do in this position, you know, to kind of make a difference. And in an executive branch agency, you're not making the laws. Like if I'd run for a legislative position, it would be easier just to vote no against all the nonsense, you know, kind of Ron Paul style. But in an executive branch agency, your hands are tied on a lot of things, but there is flexibility in some policy areas.
All right, let's talk about, first of all, how long is the term for sheriff?
4 years.
4 years, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, man, you're just getting started. People have got a long way to go to get you get you out of there if they have any chance of that. Well, first of all, let's go back to your success in the election. That is such a lopsided result that it actually makes me, you know, I've been pretty unhappy with people's response to the restrictions and stuff, and it's been discouraging to see how few people have questioned any of it, much less resisted it. But my gosh, you absolutely overwhelmed your competition when everybody clearly knew where you stood. I mean, that has to be kind of encouraging.
Yeah, you know, and it's really surprised me too, you know, this past 12 months. You know, I wondered, where's the, you know, the land of the free, the home of the brave, you know, the rugged individualism, and pretty much the restrictions on the coronavirus scare were implemented not through martial law, not through police activity. There were isolated examples of people having handcuffs put on them or guns pointed at them or being arrested for things, but it was mainly self-imposed. And, you know, that really surprised me. And another thing that surprised me, I know all the local elected officials here on a first-name basis. And before all this, I thought they were just benign, harmless individuals, that they had no desire to run other people's lives. They didn't have what Augustine called the libido dominandi, you know, the lust to rule, the desire to control other people's lives. But like Lou has pointed out, paraphrasing Mises, you know, all states want to be total. They all want to be totalitarian if they can get away with it. And I learned that lesson with I know the local mayors and city council and the board of supervisors, the elected officials and the appointed bureaucrats. And I kind of thought that they were all these just harmless little bean counters, you know. But when they had the opportunity to exert some kind of power and authority over people, they went to the max on it. We had a governor that never made like a state mask rule. But our local politicians here actually wrote a letter to the governor and petitioned him, and because he had a rule that said you can't make any restrictions that are more restrictive than what I'm setting at the state level. So they said, you know, well, we need the flexibility to make rules that fit with our local conditions here. And they jumped on board on all this stuff on, you know, shutting down churches and you had to ask permission to assemble 10 or more people. The mask rule, everybody's got to wrap their face in cloth. And it really surprised me. It really taught me that lesson that Lou was right. You know, all states, you know, all governments want to be totalitarian if they can get away with it. And just in previous years, those same individuals, like 3 years ago, if they had made a proclamation that, you know, we're going to shut down all the businesses, we're going to shut down the churches, you have to ask our permission to assemble, you know, directly violating the First Amendment, they would have been laughed out of office. You know, it would have been the proverbial flea on the back of the dog. You know, they would have been scratched off the back of the dog. You know, it's like, who do you think you are doing this? But once the door was open, once they had the opportunity to do that and they could get away with it, they went whole hog and they were not about to ever stop. As a matter of fact, I tried to give them little guidance on how they could save face and how they could get out of their mask ordinance and those sort of things. And they were not about to do it. I told them, you know, you could put a sunset provision in there where you don't have to do the all clear, everything's safe, you can all come out from hiding. It just expires on its own at a certain date. And they wouldn't even consider doing that. And recently, the governor made a new proclamation saying none of these mask rules by counties and cities were enforceable. So, you know, that did away with the enforceability of the state and county, you know, mask ordinances and social distance ordinances, occupancy restrictions. The governor said you can't have any occupancy restrictions. So they still left all those laws on the books down here, but now they're unenforceable. So it's taught me a lesson. And another thing that has surprised me, Tom, is this new tendency to rule by executive decree. Like, I'm older than you, and I remember the Vietnam War, I remember the two Gulf Wars, and never in my life do I remember this concept that you can just rule by decree, by proclamation, by fiat. And I lost count. I got up to six times during 2020 where there had been executive decrees that had affected my life, like curfews, mask orders, those types of things. And this just shocked me that there was no pushback. You know, it's like, well, where's this American spirit towards liberty and freedom? So it's been a weird year, and I just wanted to do my little part to, you know, to stand up against that. Like, you know, I have no aspirations to run anybody's life. Like, you know, Will Grigg was fond of saying that, you know, the police are the edge of the knife. Everybody else is either a you know, kind of a benign administrative bean counter or a court intellectual that wants to make macroeconomic prescriptions for how society should act or behave with the climate or some new third world country that we should be dropping bombs on so that Raytheon can make more money. So, you know, most of the state is kind of those administrative bean counters or the court intellectuals. But where the police are involved, that's where the rubber meets the road. That's where these things are actually implemented. You know, that is the edge of the knife. And I thought, well, if I get into this position, I can at least preserve people's freedoms in my county. You know, I haven't gotten a lot of thanks for it, but my only desire is just to let people live their own lives. And, you know, it's funny, like when you go down that path of promoting liberty, you find out you don't have many friends. You know, you have all these people that have an agenda. They want to push, you know, climate change or teaching gender diversity in schools or things like that. And, you know, or another war. We have big Raytheon factories just up the road from me, you know, and it's like, it's funny that there's no organized entity that promotes freedom. There's lobbying groups for special interests, but not just for the general public to promote their freedom. So you don't get a lot of thank yous.
What's your background that you would come to run for sheriff?
You know, I grew up in a five-generation ranching family here in Arizona. Since before Arizona was a state, we've been here since the 1800s. My great-grandparents came from Dodge City, Kansas, and then this became part of the U.S. in 1912. I went to the University of Arizona. I went to law school in the University of Arizona, and just trying to follow in the path of my father. He was the elected county attorney, and then he was an appellate court judge. And then, you know, along the way, I remember I had just gotten married, and I didn't have aspirations to go on to law enforcement. I was working as an assistant manager at McDonald's, and my dad suggested, hey, why don't you go apply with the sheriff's office? And it was better than I was earning at McDonald's. So I applied for that job, and then I went with the feds, and I became a manager within DEA, within the Drug Enforcement Administration, worked 8 assignments, transferred 8 times all over the world, lived in South America for 8 years in Bolivia, 5 years, Paraguay, 3 years, and worked in all the other countries in South America. You know, during this kind of whole started off with Reagan's war on drugs, and I saw all the failed aspects of that, you know, how prohibition never works, and experienced all of that firsthand. But then I just decided that, you know what, I think I'll run for sheriff here and, you know, just see if I can be a little voice for freedom in the county here. And it's surprising you don't get a lot of support on the law enforcement side because I'm sure you're familiar with regulatory capture. You know, people want to capture the guy that makes the decisions. And the whole formula for police action and government action in general is to articulate a crisis and then present yourself as the solution. So everybody wants me to go out and make speeches about how the sky is falling, doom and gloom, you know, everything's so scary. And unfortunately, my fellow sheriffs here in Arizona do a whole lot of that. You know, they try to scare everybody so that you can see how necessary they are. And there's no measure within that government system. There's no price signals to tell you how much security you need, or do you have too much, or do you have too little, or people would have done their own security. So I thought, well, if I get into this position, at least I can stand up for people, you know, living their own lives.
Hey everybody, let me just get a word in here to thank our sponsor, Merck Research. I am sure many of you are tired of hearing there's going to be a stock market crash just around the corner every day for the last 10 years. Well, our friends over at Merck Research provide unbiased monthly analysis on the economy and stock market. And through a consistent set of easy-to-read charts and frameworks with written analysis, these monthly reports provide an intellectually consistent view on the market and economy. You can download the PDF chart books with analysis or watch the video voiceover walkthrough. Their goal is to help you better understand what's really going on and ultimately to help you make better investment decisions. Almost all financial media, like all media, has become fear-mongering clickbait. And if you're tired of the nonstop and inaccurate doom and gloom and want an objective and insightful summary of what's going on in the market and economy, go over to tomwoods.com/research for a no-risk 3-month free trial. And it's only $20 a month after that. So for your no-risk 3-month free trial, check it out at tomwoods.com/research. What kind of restrictions were still in effect when you were elected? I mean, we talked about the masks and that, but were there capacity restrictions? Is there anything that people could be doing in your county that involves violating a COVID restriction?
Yeah, well, practically everything was restricted. There was occupancy restrictions, you know, like where the restaurants were down to 25%. Nobody, not even a church, was allowed to have more than 10 people. And surprisingly, a lot of the churches had shut down around here. And it, you know, it really surprised me, you know, because a lot of Christians talk about how, oh, you know, in foreign countries where they have oppressive, tyrannical governments, they have to meet secretly in houses and all this. And they say, if that ever came to this country, you know, we would stand up, you know, and we would be, you know, the first line, you know, standing up for, you know, for our Lord and Savior, proclaiming the gospel to the world. And you know what? They all just, practically every one of them just went under, you know, this county here is 95% Catholic. All the Catholic churches shut down. The Protestant churches all shut down. And it was just like shocking to me to see. I thought, you know, First Amendment, freedom of religion, freedom of assembly, these people would think absolutely the government can't tell us what to do. But they all did. And when I became sheriff in the 1st of January of this year, all those restrictions were still in place. Most of the churches still don't have services. But with this, the governor changing, nullifying all these restrictions at the city and at the county level throughout the whole state, that happened, I'm just guesstimating, 2 or 3 weeks ago. That nullified all these rules down here. And then the restaurants that had any common sense started taking the little masking tape X's off the table and the stickers off the floor, because he said there could be, that's recent though, that's within the past 2 or 3 weeks, that you couldn't have any occupancy restrictions. There could be no mask rules anymore. They cannot be enforced. Social distancing can't be enforced. All gyms and movie theaters and everything that had been closed down before had to be allowed to open. And, you know, if I could just digress a little bit, just another thing popped into my head that just recently happened. Just another little blow for freedom that I've been able to do. All the sheriffs try to work in unison in this state. They all send each other. They have like this email list, you know, that they distribute things to each other. And they're always trying to affect legislation in the state legislature. And there was this modification to the civil asset law that said you had to have an underlying criminal offense before you could take somebody's money. You can't just pull them over and grab money out of their car, and then they have to file a bond and hire an attorney and prove that it's legitimately their money, you know, and then you just turn them loose. That's the way it's always been. That's the way the feds do it. That's the way the locals do it. And every sheriff decided that they're going to sign a letter to the legislature and tell them that this is an important tool for us to fund our operations, an important tool for law enforcement. You can't take this away from us. And I got emails and phone calls from the other sheriffs saying, you need to sign this. This needs to be unanimous that we're opposing the change in language to this statute. And it was a very simple change in language. It just said that you had to have an underlying criminal offense before you could take an asset, you know, kind of like if somebody's kidnapped one of your children and then you paid ransom, then you could go get the ransom money back and charge the person with an underlying criminal offense of kidnapping and extortion. But they wanted this to continue. And I was the only sheriff that wouldn't sign their letter to the legislature. So, I mean, little things like that, it maybe doesn't sound a lot to be proud of, but I just can't believe once these people get in these positions, they have no concern about people's rights. They have no resistance in their mind to the idea of just grabbing people's money and then you have to prove that you own it legitimately. So sorry, I just digressed there on something that popped into my head.
No. I mean, you know your record and what's been going on there much better than I do. So anything that occurs to you, I want to hear. The reason, of course, I asked about the restrictions was to find out, okay, as you say, 2 or 3 weeks ago, something pretty important happened with regard to the governor and these restrictions. But before that, had you just more or less, what had you been doing? Had you just let them go?
No, what I've done is I've gotten in a lot of trouble. They have like a couple of churches that have been meeting with no mask and no occupancy restrictions. And that has been sort of determined to be within the kind of the freedom-loving population in the county, that is, you know, the little refuge city for those who like freedom, that they shouldn't be able to go into a church building and tell us what to do. So I have been the guest speaker for these groups. There's a group in the east part of the county called the Constitutional Conservatives of Southern Arizona. And before the governor lifted these restrictions, I got in hot water because I would go out and speak to groups of like 150 people. No mask, I wouldn't wear a mask, and they wouldn't wear a mask. And I would be ranting and raving, aren't there any Americans anymore? Like, you know, why do you people just go along with this stuff? Why don't you just go back to living your lives? And I would, you know, share stories about the tyranny that I was seeing inside the county government and the city government. And I spoke multiple times to these groups. And of course, there was like a little, you know, in one of those meetings, a little rat fink snitches, you know, that went and ratted on me to the elected officials in the county government. And they called me and chewed me out. And, you know, what are you doing going and talking to these groups? We heard there was 150 people and nobody had a mask on. But, you know, ultimately, they don't have an enforcement arm other than the sheriff, you know, for county. And then I'm the sheriff. So I go talk to these groups. I don't wear a mask. I talked about all the things. I talked about all the objections to the vaccinations, that there's religious objections with the aborted fetal cells that half of the different companies have used those in either production or testing. You know, talked about the powdered aluminum, the adjutants that are in there, and the immunosuppressors. So these are the types of things that I was talking about against the vaccine, you know, against the mask. And, you know, just to hand it to you, Tom, I got a lot of information from you. I get your daily emails and all the charts about, you know, mask versus unmasked, states that had restrictions versus those that don't. And I would take notes on those type of things, you know, and I could actually list names of doctors, you know, and immunologists and epidemiologists and things that they'd said. Not that anybody cares, because, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, when there's a government choosing a policy, a state entity choosing a policy, if they're presented with multiple quote-unquote scientific options, you know what they're going to choose? They're always going to choose the most authoritarian option, the thing that allows them to expand their power the most. So they're always going to choose the thing that says, shut everybody down, or make everybody wear a mask, or force everybody to get a vaccination. It doesn't matter that you have a bunch of academics and scientists and doctors saying things to the contrary and proving that these lockdowns are harmful, you know, and that you should consider the human cost. And I've said those kind of things to my fellow elected officials down here. Do you know that Fauci admitted that he did not take into consideration the unintended consequences of locking down and the emotional trauma and people losing their businesses and losing association with their family and friends and not being able to go to church? But, you know, that just kind of all falls on deaf ears.
How about your fellow sheriffs in Arizona? Is there anybody who thinks the way you do?
No, not really. You know, they're kind of like flavor of the day people. You know, they will watch the news and jump on whatever the topic of the day is, you know, and then start beating the drums on that. Learn what are you supposed to be concerned about? If you're a Republican sheriff, you're supposed to be concerned about some, you know, that Raytheon in Tucson needs to be bailed out, or that we have another foreign threat, you know, North Korea or Iran. You know, if you're a Democrat, you're supposed to be concerned about global warming, you know, and we need to, the public schools need to be teaching gender flexibility in the classrooms, you know, and that sort of thing. So it doesn't really matter, you know, sheriffs or boards of supervisors or city council. It seems like nobody has core beliefs anymore. They just kind of go along with whatever is fed to them. They tune into their favorite, you know, national TV network and listen to, here's what you're supposed to believe and here's what you're supposed to champion. And they just go along with that.
Now, I'm trying to think above the sheriff. This, maybe I'm thinking about Sheriff Richard Mack and the way he thinks about these subjects, but I'm trying to think, is there anybody, quote unquote, above the sheriff? So somebody could come in and overrule you and say, look, man, these are law. Well, maybe they're not even laws. Who even knows what status they have? But these are whatevers, and you're supposed to enforce them, and you're not doing it. Who can come in and do that? Is it anything short of a recall election?
Nobody really can. Like in a city, there's the mayor, and he can overrule the chief of police. You know, there's the governor that can overrule the state agencies. But in like our board of supervisors are kind of quasi legislative positions. They kind of vote on little ordinances and things. And we have a county manager that's an appointed position. It's not an elected position. So the sheriff is, and this historically the way it was under English common law, actually there weren't police departments until Robert Peel came up with the idea in the 1800s. They had the London police, and then that was replicated in the US, the New York police. But the sheriff was always the officer of the court. And it wasn't really a patrol function. You know, it was something like people would go to a court and present a complaint, either a civil or a criminal complaint. And then the sheriff was the arms and legs of the court to implement the sentence. Like if there was a writ of execution, go take back this guy's mule because he didn't pay for it, or this guy's car because he didn't pay for it. Then the sheriff would actually, in the physical world, go take possession of that thing. Or if the judge or the magistrate says, go take this person into custody over here because they've been charged with this crime, somebody swore out a complaint and charged him with a crime. So really, historically, there were not even federal law enforcement agencies in the United States, and police agencies weren't there from the beginning either. It was just kind of just the sheriff, and really there is nobody higher. I think the governor could maybe do something just like the feds could. The governor could get the attorney general and maybe sort of make a complaint of public corruptions or malfeasance and swear out some kind of a warrant through the attorney general and maybe get the state police to pick you up or something if you didn't do what they said. But, you know, within this typical, the courts of first instance, the superior court system, there's nobody that kind of can tell the sheriff what to do. The judges can make rulings that the sheriff is obligated to comply with, but there's nobody on the executive branch side that can tell you what to do.
Well, how about that? Not a bad position to have then, is it?
No, but then there's also the, you know, the possibility for people to throw their muscle around and to, you know, wield authority that they don't have. You know, that's obviously the reason for the separation of powers with the three branches of government, you know, and all three branches really have the authority to decide what's constitutional. Typically, people think that that's the obligation of the courts. But, you know, like an executive branch agency, like the sheriff, can nullify a decision of the legislature if it's unconstitutional, or he can nullify a ruling of the court. So, you know, all three branches supposedly are upholding the Constitution. And I think it's just kind of a fallacy to think that that's just a role of the court. So, you know, I take that position that it's my position as a member of an executive branch agency to actually stand up for the Constitution. But, you know, you have separation of powers so that the executive branch can't get too strong and just start making the rules on their own. And unfortunately, we've seen a lot of that in the last 12 months of people in executive branch positions just ruling by fiat, making decrees.
Well, I think it's very refreshing to hear from a sheriff like you, and I'm glad you read my emails. I'm glad they're doing you some good. And Lou Rockwell and other folks in our group. So I'm glad that that's having some good real world consequences somewhere. And I'm glad you're able to survive doing it.
Yeah. And can I just mention another problem that people don't know? Even the media doesn't understand that. You know, the biggest challenge for law enforcement right now is drug overdose deaths and suicide deaths. This is all across the United States. We're setting records here, like the county just north of us in Tucson, Pima County. They've had the highest number of drug overdose deaths in history since records have been kept. Like our numbers here in my county for 2020 are three times higher than the year before that, than 2019. And the local media had the audacity to call me up and blame me for that and say, aren't your deputies trained on the use of Narcan, which is a nasal spray that purportedly counteracts the effect of an opioid overdose? And I said, really? You don't know what's causing that? You know, they acted like, you know, maybe it's some failing within county government. I said, you lock people down for 12 months and you take their lives away from them. You tell them they can't visit their relatives. They can't go to school. They can't go to work. They can't go to church. And people are crawling into a bottle and committing suicide and having drug overdoses that you don't know that that comes from the social isolation, you know, that you've imposed on people, that there's unintended consequences to, you know, just deciding you're going to lock everybody down for a virus, you know, like Hazlitt's book, Economics in One Lesson. You can't just look at one thing and make some prescription for all of society to take this action here. You know, you have to look at the effects on all people for all periods of time. You know, so, and people just, you know, they look at me like with a blank stare when I say those kind of things, like, you know, you really don't know why people are dying like flies from suicide and drug overdoses after you've taken their lives away from them and they have nothing to live for. They're just living by themselves and they can't visit their relatives or friends. But anyway, I don't know if you knew that, but that's not just here in Arizona, that's across the U.S. As a matter of fact, Director Redfield of the CDC, this was a while back, he said, last year, there were more deaths from suicide and drug overdoses, what they call deaths of despair, than anything that was attributed to coronavirus, you know, and yet that doesn't matter to anybody. And like I said before, Fauci was asked that. Did you ever consider these unintended consequences, you know, the other things that are going to happen to people, you know, emotional problems or health problems or lack of visits to their doctor for other medical needs they may have? And he just said, like, I'm sure there are those consequences, but he didn't consider them. So, you know, it's like, it's just kind of crazy, the crazy world we live in right now.
No kidding. But believe me, as somebody whose job is the sad job of chronicling all this, I'm well aware of the blind spots these people, it's not even like a blind spot. It's like their entire vista of vision is a blind spot with like one tiny speck of vision. I don't know what else to say about it, but I'm glad there's a Sheriff David Hathaway. That's for darn sure.
Well, thank you. And you know, if you ever want to do this again in the future, you and me both have big families. I have 9 children. I know you have a big family. And I think there's some interesting things we could talk about, like family and culture, you know, and how family is the origin of culture. Or we could talk about lessons learned from prohibition and the failed drug war. So, you know, I think there's a lot of interesting things we could discuss if you ever want to have me back on in the future. But I really appreciate your invitation to have me on, Tom.
Oh, my pleasure. And that does sound very interesting. Well, keep up the good work. Thanks again.
Thank you so much. And if anyone wants to contact me, I have a real simple email, just sheriffdavidhathaway@gmail.com.
Okay, very good. Thanks again. All right, folks, before we wrap up for the weekend, and by the way, I got only 4 episodes out this week. I had so much going on in my life, I just could not do a 5th one. So I'm sorry, you'll just have to go through the old Woods catalog for your fix. There are a lot of previous episodes you can listen to. But anyway, I want to tell you about a 10-year-old entrepreneur whose father listens to The Tom Woods Show. The website is Lucas's Creations, and you can find it at creatingisfun.store. And this is where he sells the creations he makes out of perler beads. And when you see what he's done, it's very impressive. He's done a bunch of cartoon characters, the Among Us characters, Star Wars sports logos. It's very, very impressive. And then there's a do-it-yourself link at the top of the page. And if you click on that, you find all the different items you would need if you wanted to create using these beads. And of course, all those links are Amazon affiliate links, so you can help the guy out by using those. So check it out at creatingisfun.store and give some encouragement to a 10-year-old entrepreneur. And of course, that 10-year-old entrepreneur has a very smart father because not only does he listen to the Tom Woods Show, but he took me up on my offer. If he gets hosting for that site through Woods' link, well, then his son's site is going to get a shout out on the show, along with other benefits. So if that appeals to you, then before you get your site set up, check out tomwoods.com/publicity and see what I can do for you. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.